Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Talk, the only unified platform for reservations, takeout, and event management. Switch to Talk today to increase your revenue and reach 19 million loyal and engaged guests around the country.
If your food media diet is fueled by HRN, become a monthly donor today. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, July 21st, 2021. This is our 296th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a successful entrepreneur and restaurateur, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be timeless. Yes, strive to be a classic with eternal quality unchanged by time. We can all seek to have a presence that will preserve and never be dated, but instead make everlasting impressions. Timelessness is simply priceless, so let's aim to produce what will last seemingly forever. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very excited to have my guest joining me. It is Manish Goel. He is the founder and partner at Sona, a new Indian brasserie in New York City's Flatiron District, which he founded with hospitality veteran David Rabin and acclaimed actress and businesswoman Priyanka Chopra Jonas, along with executive chef Hari Nayak, featuring Timeless India. A natural host and entertainer and a successful entrepreneur, Manish is the founder and CEO of MKG Experiential Marketing Agency, as well as the founder of Pineapple Co., where he discovers, supports, and launches new ventures. Without further ado, Manish, welcome to the show.
Thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled you're thrilled, because this is, I'm so excited to hear about your story and your background. And so let's get into it. Tell me a bit about where you grew up and then how you became this serial entrepreneur.
For sure. And actually, the way I grew up plays and factors very prominently into my current day story. And I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas. And I am the son of immigrants. My parents came from India in the mid to late 60s at a time when there was a lot of movement towards America, seeking a opportunity and seeking a different way of life. And so that's what brought my parents here. And they settled in Dallas, Texas, where my father got a job as an engineer at Xerox. And it was then, I'm the youngest of three, they had three young kids, young couple themselves. And my father looked around and he recognized that there was not a single Indian restaurant, not just in the city of Dallas, but in the entire state of Texas, the very large state of Texas. No Indian restaurant had yet been opened. And so in 1975, with kind of the grit of a young man, he decided while he had a full-time job at Xerox, he opened Texas's first Indian restaurant named India House. And he opened it 2 months after I was born. And he ultimately left his job and he had it for a decade plus. And so I was born into an Indian restaurant. And so I found a lot of my identity as a young boy growing up in Dallas, Texas, you know, I kind of would joke that it was like cowboys and Indians, you know, because I would try to fit in to school and with, you know, my school daytime culture. And then at night I would go to the restaurant. And so I found a lot of my identity there, and it really stuck with me. I knew at that point, and of course I was a young boy, but it was in me and in my heart and in my soul that maybe one day I wanted to follow in my father's footsteps. So, you know, which amazingly brings us to this conversation today about Sona in New York. You know, it was more than four decades later, but I've now done it, and I've followed in his footsteps. So that makes me very proud.
Yes. So did your father or did your parents, in a sense, discourage you from getting into the restaurant business? I don't know. I've heard that sometimes with people whose parents own restaurants being like, this is such a hard life. You might not want to do this. But
it's so funny. It's so funny you say that. That's exactly what they said. you kind of just nailed it right there. Yeah, I think that it was a different time. He was trying to introduce Indian food to the Texas market, not a market that is otherwise known, especially in the mid 70s, to be a place where you know there have adventurous eaters. And so he faced a pretty big uphill road. And also, you know, he was kind of a one man show, and he did have the restaurant, as I said, for over a decade, but he remembers how hard it was. And so he really thought about, Manish, you know, what are you looking for in this next chapter of your career? Are you ready for this? But I'm driven by passion, and I really feel like we're doing something very different with Indian food. And ultimately, after they were fully vaccinated in April of this year, we opened in March and April, they both came up from Dallas and they stepped foot into Sona. And I got to say, it was a very monumental moment for me and for them.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it had to have been. And having been to Sona now twice, actually, it's such a beautiful restaurant. I mean, just I don't know. I would imagine they were very impressed.
Yeah, they were impressed, and they were proud. And in some ways, I think that there's another layer to the story that people might not see and recognize. Because of course, you know, my father would say, "Well, this Indian restaurant, it was nothing like mine." And I said, "Well, yeah, of course. We're different people. We're in different cities, and it's a different time. You know, this is 2021 versus 1975." But I think more importantly, and I think we all face this as you know, not only do we age, but as the generation from where we came, as they age, there's really a connection to the country that they left, but they still feel a strong kinship with. Now they probably feel a little bit prouder and rest a little easier, knowing that even when they are no longer here and they're brothers and sisters who are also in America might not be here, at least my generation, we're going to stay connected to this country. And it might be through opening a restaurant, and, you know, I might not speak the language as well as I wish I did or as well as they do. But in some ways, we're not going to forget the origin of our story in America, which, you know, the origin of our family, which, of course, started in India. And so I think in that way, they felt even more proud, or I feel very proud to know that, you know, we've got this indelible link to this wonderful country that I have never lived in, but I'm forever connected to because of my parents. So I think that there's that other story that sometimes doesn't get said out loud as much, but I think is really in my heart for sure.
Yes. So why now did you decide to open this restaurant? I mean, I touched on a little in your bio of a couple of your businesses, but I know you've had many businesses, not in the restaurant space, but I mean, if you want to talk a little bit about
Sure.
what you're doing, and then what led you to the timing now of opening Sona and finding your partners, which are impressive people to be working with.
Yeah, for sure. No, I did not always think or know that I would be an entrepreneur, even though my father had started a business, and after he closed India House, he had other businesses. So I lived with an entrepreneur, if you will, but I didn't necessarily have that in my blood. But then I moved to New York, and I started to really want to be driven by fulfillment and not necessarily accolades. And so I ultimately tried to get it. I didn't have any experience in the event business, but I decided to get into the event business because, like I said, it felt right for me. I like bringing people together. I like fast-paced environments. I like troubleshooting and putting out fires. And so I ended up in the events business, and I ultimately built my own business, and I built it successfully, and it grew it to New York and LA, and we had a lot of employees. And so I went on this very unexpected but wonderful entrepreneurial ride. But at the core of that ride was the fact that I like to bring people together. And I'd never been, as you mentioned, I'd never been in hospitality, but I love the idea of people in a room. That's why I was in the event business. And I was doing events for brands. That was kind of our thing. So we weren't doing social or personal events, but we were working with brands. But also I felt that I was learning a lot as an entrepreneur. And then I was really struck by what was in the back of my head, which was my childhood and the fact that I said that one day I want to follow in my dad's footsteps. And I have no idea, had no idea, let's say, how to open a restaurant. But I was enjoying being an entrepreneur. I was enjoying bringing people together. I built a very successful, at this point, event marketing business. And I said, I think my next chapter, my next step is, no one's telling me to do this. Certainly in some ways, my family is very sweetly discouraging me to do this. But I think I want to do this. I want to open a restaurant, and not just any restaurant. I want to open an Indian restaurant. And then you mentioned my partners, and I didn't really know where to start. And I know you've spoken to David before, and David's such a great guy. And David and I are personal friends. David Rabin, who's kind of he's a veteran in New York in the hospitality industry, formerly in the nightlife space and now really in the restaurant space. And he and I were personal friends. And so it's not, you know, some people think it's really Herculean, but I did it very simply. I said, okay, who do I know and who do I like? And so he was the first phone call I made. I said, hey, David, I've got an idea, and I don't really know many people in the business, but you're in the business. So will you talk this through with me? And I didn't even ask him to join me. I just said, talk it through with me. And he really said, like, Manish, you've got something here. And I said, well, would you want to do this with me? And he said, let's talk about this. And, you know, so it happened very organically because we personally knew each other. And I knew that the business would sometimes have, you know, characters that might be not the most upstanding. Or I had heard that. I didn't know that personally. And David is a super upstanding person. So I felt like at least if I'm going to bring somebody on very early, that at least I was going to work with a great man and a great person. And he is. And we work wonderfully together. So that's kind of how the whole project started, is me just reaching out to a friend. And then I said, okay, I need to find a chef. And I was talking to another friend. I said, so I've got to find a chef. And I have no idea how to find a chef. Because I've got the idea, I've got the story, I've got the passion. I feel like I can raise the money and I can be the entrepreneur, but I am not a chef. And this food has to be spectacular because I want to really reintroduce in some ways Indian food to the New York market. And so I said, so how do I find a chef? And my friend said, well, there's a friend who's kind of connected to the industry said, there are search firms that actually connect you to chefs. And I had no idea that such firms existed. I said, really? There's like, you know, I've heard of executive search. I had not heard of search that works in specifically hospitality, but or broadly hospitality, but specifically chefs. And he ultimately said, yeah, I think I know of this one firm. So again, I didn't interview three firms. So I didn't even know, you know, there was one firm. He said, have a meeting with them. I met with the firm. They seemed great. I'm still very friendly with them. And I hired this firm to help me find a chef. And they ultimately executed a global search because we're talking about Indian food and this person might have lived in Singapore or London or Dubai or, you know, so we ultimately did a global search, and that search led me right in our backyard to meet the amazing, wonderful Hari Nayak. So you can kind of see how the pieces started to come together somewhat organically. And this was back in 2015. And so we opened, as you mentioned, in March of 2021. So truly, I mean, this was years in the making. So I was meeting and having conversations with David in late 2014, 2015. We met Chef for the first time in 2015. So, you know, it took us a long, long time to get to where we are, but you know, we had slowly been putting pieces together for a long time.
Right. No, it's like putting together a puzzle, and you definitely figured it out. And yes, I've known, I don't know, I mean, I interviewed David, I was looking at yes. episode 169, and I remember we talked about how he liked partnering, he liked having projects with different partners, which, you know, I don't know if, you know, everyone would be in the same mindset. But I remember he said that. But also just a little fun fact, I'll tell you, when I started doing PR back in 2000, 2001, we represented Lotus.
Oh, and wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that, and that's how I met David. It was my first PR job.
Wow. So, that's quite an impressive client to have.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible because I didn't study PR in school. I kind of just fell into working at this agency that then worked with a lot of high profile chefs and restaurants and bars. And that was, I remember that place so well. And it was, I mean, it had such a great run too.
Yeah, it did. And it really, I don't know, it feels like in many ways it changed the game in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have a long history with him as well, and I think it's so great that you partnered with him and it all worked out. How did you come up with the idea of timeless Indian cuisine? What exactly does that mean as you interpret it? And then and also getting into, I mean, you said you started these talks in 2015. I mean, I'm assuming last year with the pandemic probably slowed you down a little bit with getting open.
Did it ever? It sure did.
Yeah.
So what I meant by, and what I do mean, I should say, by timeless India is I have this real penchant and interest and desire to think about and in some ways emulate what I would call the golden age of dining. So you can almost imagine beautifully dressed diners in railway cars in India in a different era, or diners gathering in a ballroom, you know, with, you know, ladies in white gloves and men dressed, and just kind of this notion of, you know, well before everyone looking at their phones at dinner and with having, you know, when the entertainment was the guests and not, you know, Instagram and, you know, all this different time. And I think about that time as being a timeless era. And when I wanted to do an Indian restaurant, I wanted to be first and foremost a New York restaurant. And that's, I think, what sets us apart is we have we really, and it's because of me and David and the rest of the team that we really are a New York restaurant, but of course, with a fully Indian state of mind. And when I think about what kind of state of mind specifically, it's really bringing and evoking the spirit of this bygone era of the golden age of dining and being really aspirational when we think about the space that we're in, the music that we're listening to, the art on the walls, etc. So we really highly considered all of that, but mostly from our design. And since you've, of course, been to the restaurant a couple of times, you know that our design is different than other Indian restaurants in the sense that it's muted in some ways. It's understated. It's really beautiful backlit arches, and it's really just kind of has a glow to it. But very specifically, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but the second highest concentration of Art Deco outside of South Beach, outside of Miami, South Beach, is in Mumbai, in, you know, the town formerly known as Bombay. And so Bombay has this really amazing, rich history with deco. And our designer, myself included, we really wanted to evoke that spirit of Art Deco. And that's not something that people connect to India. They don't think about Art Deco in India. They think about, of course, South Beach and The Birdcage, the amazing funny film, and, you know, like things of that nature, but they don't think about India. So we, you know, you come in and you see this, you know, we have a tower, a bar tower, and it's very Art Deco inspired. And we say it's like the jewel on top of Soane. It's like our jewelry, because it's golden and lit beautifully, and it's very deco. And that's the reason that I kind of really have honed in on this notion of timeless India, because it's really about just a time when people sit back, you know, your shoulders go down, your phones slip away, and you just really enjoy being together. And that's the goal. Like, it's not to say that we, you know, we slap you on the hand. Of course, if you have your phone, it's, you know, that's by no means the idea. It's just about the spirit we're trying to evoke.
Yeah. Well, the space is really beautiful, and there, yeah, it's very special. And I am feel fortunate I've been able to dine there. I can't wait to come back. Let me ask you my question from my last guest. Actually, I had two questions. This is on episode 295. I had on Joshua David Stein. He's a journalist and the author of many cookbooks, books, and children's books. His latest is Cooking for Your Kids at Home with the World's Greatest Chefs. So his first question is, or was, do you have any reservations for this Friday for two people? knowing you're popular.
We are thankfully very popular, but we always have a reservation for a friend of Sherry. So yes, like, of course.
I like it.
We can always make that happen.
All right. I feel very special at this moment. Okay, cool. And the second question is, what are some of the challenges of presenting high-end, modern Indian cuisine in the city as a fine dining experience, essentially? Do you feel like those challenges are diminishing a little bit or getting easier? And if so, what do you attribute that to?
So I think the challenge really is, you know, something I guess that's happening around the world right now, which is misinformation. You know, broadly speaking. So in our category of dining and Indian food, there's a lot of misinformation about Indian cuisine and about, and, you know, like what the experience will be like, what it tastes like, what the after effects might be, what the smells are, et cetera. And so I think that's our biggest hurdle to cross is you have people who love it. Super fans will, you know, come to Indian restaurants just because they want Indian food. And then you have people who are very new to the cuisine. And if anything, you know, like might not have such a interest in it. And then, of course, you have the people that are very opposed to it and just feel like it's not for them and it's going to be too spicy and it's not going to work well with them. And what we have to really do is open up people's minds and literally open their mouths to try Sona's food, which we feel like is very different than other Indian food because it's lighter, it's accessible, it's very seasonal, it's just it's pure Indian. You know, I don't like the word fusion, especially for our cuisine. But it is, I would say, a little bit more inventive. But, you know, Chef Hari Nayak's food is pure Indian, and he's born and raised in India. But we have to educate people, and really, that's still part of what our process is. And thankfully, more and more people are coming on board, and we're having I call them that we are having converts and more where people are like, wow, I didn't know I liked Indian food this much. And I was like, well, that's awesome. And please don't stop here, you know, continue to discover it because there's a lot to discover in this cuisine. And so that's really exciting, but that's definitely one of the biggest hurdles we have to cross.
Yeah. What, do you have any favorite dishes or dishes you'd for someone even that maybe was, you know, maybe a little skeptical coming in, but what would you say you have to get on the menu?
So I think probably one that I am personally most connected to, and it's just so delicious, is our butter chicken. And butter chicken is something that you might find on other Indian menus, but ours actually just has a lot of heritage to it because the name on the menu is actually India House's Butter Chicken. And so, as I mentioned, this is a recipe that was used at India House in Texas in the 1970s. So it's actually entirely inspired by and taken from the original recipe that my father was using at his restaurant. So our butter chicken is exceptionally special, delicious, flavorful, and comes with a really great somewhat slightly tangy sauce that is a real delight. So that's, I think, one thing that's a not to miss. I also really love our halibut. It's in a turmeric, has kind of like a very light turmeric glaze to it with some tapioca dumplings. And it's just really, it's light and it's so flavorful. And it's I think, one of the standouts on our menu.
Yeah, well, I can attest to the butter chicken because I did have that.
And oh, good. I
fabulous.
Like that. I like
and then
that.
I also had, I had when my first visit, I went solo, and I actually talked about it on my episode 288. I gave a whole rundown of it. But I went with Floyd's Goan fish curry.
Fish curry, yeah.
Which for Floyd Cardoz, I believe it was a tribute the chef was doing for him. And that curry, I could have licked the bowl. I mean, that was delicious.
Oh, that's so kind. And that's, I'm so happy you mentioned that dish because it's also a really personal and beautiful dish. Not only is the flavoring of the preparation of the fish curry really special, but it does stand very proudly in tribute to the late great chef Floyd Cardoz, who we very sadly lost just over a year ago from COVID. And he was really the pioneer, I should say, of Indian cuisine in not only in New York, but really in America, with, you know, most notably with his legendary restaurant Tabla that he had, really that is so, it was just steps away from where Sona is. And he was somebody that we, both myself and Chef Hari, were personal friends with, but also really looked up to. And so given both of those reasons, it was that we were, you know, we really admired him and knew what he did to this cuisine. We really wanted to pay tribute to him. And so we were very blessed and grateful when his wife, Barca Cardoz, allowed us to and gave us the blessing to name a dish in his honor. So that makes us, it makes us very proud, and it's a very delicious dish.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I love that you have that as a tribute, and I knew Floyd as well. And honestly, it was like half the reason I got that dish was just because I had to get it. It was a tribute dish for him, and it was just then just so ultimately delicious. It was like, it was, so I say anyone, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong on your menu, but these two that we're talking about, Floyd's fish curry and the butter chicken are definitely, I would definitely recommend both.
That's great. No, I appreciate that. I love that you enjoyed it as much as, you know, and it's meaningful for people who knew him and know of him. So I appreciate that.
Right. Yeah. No, thank you. So as a new-ish, I guess, restaurateur, yeah. What has surprised you, or what's been the most challenging or the most rewarding for you?
So again, another really great question, because it's almost like you don't know where to start. I would say the one thing that has been the most fulfilling is the capacity. I'm an extrovert, right? So I love people. I've always loved people. I was in the events business before, as I mentioned. Now I'm in hospitality. And so meeting people and seeing people has been such a joy and a gift. And in some ways, because I lead a full and a big life, like a lot of restaurateurs, I love the convenience of going to one place every night and being able to see people. So it's kind of funny that I jokingly say that I followed in Celine Dion's footsteps. And of course, people say, like, what the heck are you talking about? And I said, well, Celine Dion invented the residency in Vegas when she said, I'm not going on tour. If you want to see me, you come to me. And so, you know, and she very, you know, smartly and successfully created a residency, and people came to see her. And now I say, well, I'm in residence at Sona. So I get to see so many people because they not only am I grateful that they come in to the restaurant to eat, but I meet new people. You know, I'm one of those restaurateurs who walks up to tables and welcomes guests and introduces myself and hands out my card and just wants to meet people. So that's been a great joy. I really enjoy that. And it's not a burden. It doesn't feel like work. Rather, quite the opposite. It really feels like, wow, here, you know, like this is almost like pinch me. I love this. So that's great. And I think one of the biggest challenges has been like just maintaining the level of expectation that we all have when you are running a very busy, very full restaurant that is still new. We're about 3.5 months old, almost 4 months old, that is still new. Staffing, you know, we none of us who are on this or listening to this need to, you know, further discuss just the challenges of staffing right now, but with the hard challenges of staffing and with being busy, and you know, you just don't want things to slip, and we're still building systems. So, you know, systems will help and will help prevail, but right now we're still building systems. So I think that that's what's been really interesting and somewhat a challenge, is to say like, okay, we've got a lot that we want to accomplish and that we need to accomplish every night. And how much are we actually accomplishing? You know, and thankfully the guests don't really see when we're not, but you know, are we, you know, every time somebody asks for a, you know, simple things, a cup of ice, do we know when it comes to the table to put a spoon with it? You know, and I've seen a couple of times where people are like, all right, I got my ice, but now where's, you know, how do I, you know, like just little things that are just going to help to perfect and perfect and perfect. And that's, you know, what I'm looking forward to, but it's a challenge because all those little things certainly add up. And I know that we are so close to being done, but I, you know, I'm looking forward to the time when it feels like, all right, everybody is on the same page and we are operating like a very smooth machine. And that takes time. And, you know, so I need to give it more time, but you know, that's definitely a challenge because you really want every guest to have the most wonderful experience.
Yeah. Well, sounds like spoken like a true restaurateur.
Yeah. I think that's probably right.
Yeah. And I have to say, I mean, you're, the block you picked to have a residency on, I give you kudos to, because I'm always in awe of East 20th Street. Like, how are there so many great restaurants on your block?
It really is remarkable, I would say, because it is and you know, not only is it an amazing block, but it feels so good too. Uh-huh. Meaning that we all have gotten to know each other. The other day, Michael Anthony came in, you know, the chef, of course, from Gramercy Tavern. Danny Meyer came in for dinner the other night with his wife. So the chef and owner of co-owners, I guess, of Res Dora across the street came in. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, like we all are just in each other's orbits and we're all rooting for each other. And it just feels like a little restaurant row on 20th Street. And it's such a gift to feel that sense of community. When you're opening your first restaurant, you know, I'm in my mid 40s and I'm opening my first restaurant, and this just feels like such a joy.
Yeah. There is great energy on your block. I'm not joking. I think it's like a little, it's a gem in Manhattan when it comes to dining. So you're in very good company right there.
I think that's right. And I appreciate that. It feels that way. And people oftentimes comment to say like, wow, this is the block. And I knew, you know, it's worth mentioning that I knew when I was opening Sona that I had to be very deliberate about our location. And I had no idea that I would end up on 20th Street because of course I couldn't predict that, but I knew that I was going to be relentless about finding a great location. And in fact, the space that we're in was the fourth space that we really made a very deliberate pass at and tried to get. And the other ones fell through for very different reasons, and some of which we spent 9 months working on, and then things fell through. And you know, this goes back to why I met Chef and David in 2015, and we didn't open it until 2021. Of course, COVID was responsible for the last year of that delay, but prior to that, it just like we had a really hard time and we were looking at different spaces. And, you know, I guess it really is true what everyone says, that everything works out in the end, because we ended up on our dream block. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, that was not by exact design, but I knew I wanted a really AAA location, and we certainly ended up there.
Yes, you've done well. And on that note, let's take a little break. We'll come back. We'll play my speed round game. We'll talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm excited to partner with Talk, the only unified platform for reservations, takeout, and event management. Talk is home to 7,000 restaurants, bars, wineries, and breweries, including Stretch Pizza, Wiley Dufresne's Pizza Residency at Bread's Bakery here in New York City. So a few weeks ago, I mentioned that I had booked a stretch pizza to go reservation through Talk. And now I want to tell you about my experience. Stretch Pizza has been so popular that I had actually booked a waitlist spot through Talk. Luckily, a reservation popped up and I was able to order in advance to pick up my pizza. And what did I get? Well, I ordered the classic New York pizza and a breakfast calzone. And when I arrived to get it, it turned out to be Wiley's birthday and he was having a party at Bread's Bakery. I had amazing timing. And since I'm friendly with him and his wife and friends, because they are all in the industry, I ended up crashing his party, trying even more pizza than I had ordered, and I was sharing mine with them. So it was super fun. You want to hear more about it? I talked about the experience on episode 291. Now, Talk makes food experiences like Stretch Pizza possible. To learn more about how Talk powers reservations, events, and takeout, go to exploretalk.com/join. That's exploretalk, TOCK.com/join.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. You may have noticed that we have a whole new look. We also launched a new website that's going to make your listening easier and more enjoyable than ever before. HRN is the original food podcast network. And as we enter a new chapter in our 12-year history, I want to ask you to invest in HRN for the long haul. If you rely on this show to fuel your food media diet, become a monthly sustaining member today. Our members keep the voice of America's food movement alive and kicking. Your donations support this podcast along with 40 other shows on Heritage Radio Network. Your contribution helps give HRN the security we need to stay on the airwaves throughout the pandemic, and your continued support is allowing us to reopen our studio. Plus, we like to give our regular members special treatment. So sign up to become a monthly donor and get access to our secret menu. We've gathered together exclusive discounts and offers from some of your favorite food and beverage brands. So you get to enjoy insider pricing on goods that will ship right to your door. Join our community of monthly donors and special deals will come your way throughout the summer. So can you make a gift of $5 or $10 a month? It'll show me and our whole team at HRN how much this podcast and food radio in general means to you. Become a monthly sustaining member today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Manish Goel. He is an entrepreneur and restaurateur who recently opened Sona, a new Indian brasserie in New York City's Flatiron District featuring Timeless India. So, Manish, it's time for my speed round. What this is I'm going to name a couple things and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Large plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Kevin, Joe, or Nick?
Nick, all the way. Great question.
For those who don't know what I'm talking about or we're talking about, that's the Jonas Brothers, and Nick is married to Priyanka.
That's so
funny. I'm glad you got it.
I sure did. That was great. And you know what? Your first question right there just tripped me up when you said eat in or eat out. And what I thought that you meant, now I realize there's in today's day and age, there's two there's two ways to interpret that. I thought you meant like eat in, like indoor dining or outdoor dining or eating at home or going out. So when I said eat in, I like to go inside as opposed to sit in the outdoor dining areas. You know, personally, right now, I'm liking this eating inside. But if you're asking me if I'm going to go out to dinner or stay in, I'm always going out to dinner.
Yes, and I said this on my show last week because the exact same thing came up, and ever since the pandemic,
yeah,
no one understands that one because it's changed. I did used to mean eat in at home or eat out at a restaurant, so I think I'm gonna have to change that one up a little bit.
That's so funny, yeah. Because when I said that, I was like, oh wait, I think I might have said the wrong thing, but it's fine.
But seriously, it's like every single person on this show since in 2021 has been the same way. So
of course, yeah, we're all like we all have been living an alternate universe. So it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you're right on point with that. Okay, I have three more: garlic or chili cheese naan.
Chili cheese naan.
Chili cheese. I did try that. It's quite something.
It's yeah. So good.
Never had that before. Okay, cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
Or Dallas. I should throw in Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm a Manhattan guy.
All right, cool. That's the game.
I love it.
Yeah, that was fun.
Very fun.
Okay, so for industry news, there was an article in the Washington Post entitled Jeff Bezos Awards Jose Andres $100 million for Courage and Civility. This was by Emily Heal. This article was actually everywhere yesterday after Jeff Bezos came back from space. It was like a 10-minute ride up into space, which was big, big news in the media. He came down and he made this award gave these to two people, which I don't think anyone knew was coming, but to Jose Andres and also to Van Jones, a CNN commentator and activist. He's giving them $100 million they can distribute to the charity of their choosing. And of course, Jose, our hero, my hero, said he's going to give all the money to World Central Kitchen. So I just thought that was just, I mean, anything with Jose Andres, I just feel I have to talk about because he's just so, so inspirational.
I totally agree. And he is, in my estimation, one of, like, just a man and a person, I should say, a human, to emulate, to live a life like he lives his life. I mean, what I know of him, and I certainly don't know everything, but what I know of him and his work and his talent and his charisma and his servitude is so inspiring to me. So I'm with you. I read that as well, of course, like all of us, as you mentioned, and I was very struck by the, what a day, right? I mean, going up to space and then these gifts, and I don't know, I'm still a little conflicted about the whole thing. Was it just like, what was the intention behind it all? But overall, I'm really happy that these two men and these two people were you know, now are going to be able to do more good in the world.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, I think it's amazing that that Jeff Bezos is giving this money to them. And I mean, I think anyone listening to the show knows that he's the founder of Amazon and the wealthiest man
in the world. Yes, yes.
But what people may not know, which will be a fun fact, is that Jeff Bezos went to my high school, Valedictorian of Palmetto High School in Miami, Florida.
Oh, wow.
A couple years ahead of me, but it's kind of crazy to think that he went to my high school, but he did.
Yeah, that's quite a life. But yeah, no, I'm extreme, and maybe it's the wrong word, but I'm a super fan of Jose Andres, so that's exciting.
Yeah, me too. And also, I'll just touch on, I don't really understand why all these billionaires are all of a sudden everyone's going to space, but it just seems, it's like what's in right now.
It does. It's so odd to me. I'm with you. I think that it's such an odd kind of phenomenon right now. It's like, is this the new yacht? Like, I don't know. It's odd.
But apparently it is. But I mean, good for them. It's just the whole thing is just kind of, it's been an interesting news cycle. So this touching in on our, you know, hospitality industry and of course the great Zandre's, I didn't think this would be the news we'd be talking about today, but here we are.
Yeah.
So very cool. And thank you and congratulations to Jose for all that you do. Okay, so for my solo dining experience this week, here's the rundown. It's at Yellow Rose. The location, 102 3rd Avenue near East 13th Street in the East Village, New York City. The concept, it's a genuine cosmic Texas cooking restaurant, tying in Texas here. The owners, Christiana Rizzo and Dave Rizzo, who are from San Antonio, Texas. So why'd I go? Well, I heard really great things about this place. It's like a newish Tex-Mex restaurant. So I was like, it's been on my list and I finally made it. My experience. So this past weekend, I went for a late brunch. I biked over there from, I'm over on the west side and arrived. It was very hot. It was a hot day, but I was like, they have a counter. The guy asked me if I was going to be taking to go. I said, no, I'd like to stay. So I found a little spot up front on there. They have some counter seating and some tables. And I just sat there. The waitress came over and very nice. And I ordered and I had a very low key brunch experience. What did I get? So I got two tacos. I got the migas, which was scrambled eggs, roasted tomatoes, poblanos, onions, and corn tortilla chips. And the barbacoa, which was braised beef cheeks, onions, cilantro, and avocado, both in fresh flour tortillas, which they make there. And I also got a pink cake, which they had. I had heard about their chocolate cake, but they didn't have it available then. But the pink cake came with strawberry rhubarb jam, which I knew was super seasonal. So I went with that. It also had a pink cream cheese frosting and rainbow sprinkles. So it was very festive. My take? Tacos were fabulous, really outstanding. I mean, the flour tortillas were they're handmade flour tortillas, really, you notice a difference. So delicious, great combinations between getting the migas with the eggs and the barbacoa with the meat. And I liked the cake too. The cake was great. I didn't finish the whole thing. I had some leftovers there. The ambiance, so it's like a casual honky-tonk chic spot. It's got like yellow colors and it's fun. It feels very welcoming. They were playing some festive country music, which I think was also on the TVs, but I couldn't really tell. The TVs were in the other room. But it was chill and I liked it. Perfect for brunch, lunch, or dinner with friends. Interesting tidbit, Yellow Rose began as a pop-up in Bed-Stuy in February 2020 and now has become a permanent location since November. I've heard this great stuff about the chocolate cake. I'm going to have to go back and get that again. Some people are saying it's the best they've ever had. And these flour tortillas they're making are with Sonoran flour that they specialize in, and they're pressed to order. Personal fun fact. So barbacoa always reminds me, a couple years ago, I took a trip to Mexico City and I had the opportunity to go outside the city and up into the mountains on this little field trip where we had barbacoa tacos in the mountains over the open fire. And it was fabulous. And whenever I see that on the menus, I want to order it and compare. And these tacos were really great. So it was great to have that in New York. The cost of my meal was $22, not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes. And their website is yellowrosenyc.com and Instagram yellowrose.nyc. There we go. Have you been to this place, Manish?
I haven't, but it sounds great. As a Texan, as you know, mm-hmm. I just wrote it down here, so I'm going to definitely go. And I live on 13th Street as well, so I've got a spot now.
Oh, cool. I'd love to see what you think of it. Cause I know, I mean, last time I was in Austin, I was, always on a mission to find good tacos or where the locals are going to. So I'm sure
of course.
You know, a good taco.
I do. And I'm excited to check it out. No, thanks for the tip. Very helpful.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah. It's a great spot. Okay, so for the final question, my next guest is Stephen Hall. He's the founder of Hall PR, which is a multilingual media agency focusing on culinary and hospitality. I've known Stephen a really long time, and his agency is similar to mine, being mostly representing restaurants in New York City. Manish, can you please ask the question for Stephen?
So a question that I would have for Stephen is, can you do to Sona what you are doing for the amazing guys behind Damaka and Ada, because they get such tremendous press, including the wonderful New York Times story this week, the Eater story. But I've gotten to know Stephen, and I am really impressed by his work. But he clearly knows Indian food. So no, I guess the real question would be is, like, how do you make a restaurant that has in a category, in a cuisine category, how do you make it stand out amongst all the rest? Because that's, you know, like something that we think about. Of course, New York and most cities have a lot of Indian restaurants, and so how do we stand out amongst all the rest? And he's figured out how to do that really impressively with some of his clients, and I think he's a great guy. So I'd love to hear his thoughts on that.
That's awesome. I will find out. I mean, I'm sure we will be talking about Indian cuisine, because I recently was at Damaka with Stephen and with a group, and we got their rabbit that they
did. Yeah. It's like one per day or something, right?
One per day, ordered in advance. I mean, I was lucky to be there and get to try it, and it was delicious. And he has done an incredible job working with them. I find, and I'm interested to talk to him too, more about it too, because I feel Damaka and Sona, even though you're both Indian restaurants in Manhattan, but they're very different in
many
ways.
Yeah, they are. They're very different, and both with really great teams. And that's why I think it's exciting, because there's plenty of space for all of us to be, to coexist, and in some ways to just elevate the entire category, so which is exciting. So I'm really excited for what those guys are doing and what Steven's doing with them.
Yeah, me too. Awesome. I will ask him. We'll talk about it for sure. And congratulations to you. Thank you so much for joining me. I really loved hearing about your background and having gone to your restaurants. I can't wait to come back. And I just wish you much continued success.
I appreciate that so much, Sherry. I've had a blast talking with you, and I look forward to seeing you hopefully at Sona very soon.
Yeah, I'll be coming. So awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. You have a great day.
Thanks. My guest today has been Manish Goel. He's an entrepreneur and founder and partner of Sona, featuring timeless Indian cuisine in the heart of Manhattan. His website is sona-nyc.com, and you can follow him at Manish K. Goel and at Sona New York. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites, bayerpublicrelations.com, sherrybayer.com, and allintheindustry.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org, where you're also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. So it's our summer membership drive here at Heritage Radio Network, and we would love your support. As many of you know, I started this All in the Industry podcast over 7 years ago. I can't believe I've been on the air that long. And it's a passion project. It always has been. And I love having this platform to share the inspirational stories with hospitality leaders. I'm really grateful. And I'm really grateful to be a part of HRN family, and to all of you who've listened and supported all of these years. It would mean so much to us if you would consider becoming a monthly sustaining member of HRN if you aren't already. You can give any amount, even a dollar a month, to keep our show on the air. HRN is a nonprofit, and we do rely on support from our listeners. So I thank you in advance. If you would consider becoming a member, please go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and designate my show All in the Industry. And again, thank you so much for being part of All in the Industry. My engineer today is Amanda Wang. As always, thank you, Amanda. And thanks again to Manish. And thanks to Manish's wonderful publicist, Jesse. Also, big thanks to our sponsor of our show today, Talk. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next week with a new show. Stay safe and well, and thank you again for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio. .org.